coffee mugs.
See, look, and then when I...
Perfect.
Coming to you live from the basement of an abandoned training facility where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show, where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up, because we're going live.
Live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
So, what were we talking about? Coffee mug?
Coffee mug. Of how amazing
look,
it looks.
Tell me it's not a little bit phallic, guys. Look, it gets bigger as I as I swallow.
Sort of egg-shaped.
That's what you said.
Ha! Oh! With the paws. I like it.
Thank you, brother.
Good to see you guys.
Happy yeah, it's nice to finally get Justin Sims on the program.
It's nice to finally be here. Feeling a lot better, so thank you for your patience, guys.
We'd like to welcome our guest here.
Andre Ewell in the building, UFC rising star. Pleasure to have you. And of course, the sexiest man in show business, David Potter.
Oh, see, I'm talking about
hey, I stole
we
it.
That on to you, man. Look. Now we're talking about me. Look.
Andre, how you doing tonight?
Man, doing amazing. Doing amazing. Especially today. I ended up having my boy like basically like, all day today. So nothing but like amazing bonding going on at the moment. You know,
How old is your son?
Literally 3 months and some change. Getting ready to be 4 months in about a week and a half. Yeah, so excited about that newborn. So June's doing amazing things, making me smile. So
is that your first?
No, this is my second. So second. Granted, like a lot of people end up knowing about the story about my first child, Eli. Basically been kicked out and everything and still like fighting and everything. But June is my reborn, or basically that reincarnation of just me, period, you know. Something that was been missing, and that missing piece became connected on having my boy, and now it's just giving me an extra chance to fight even harder to get my first child, you know. So all smiles on my end.
And as a fan, too, just watching your last fight, and congratulations on your last win in February. I believe you beat Jonathan, his last name, Martinez. It was a close split decision, but you end up with a W. You know, from a fan's perspective, you know, nothing's amiss with you. I mean, you still got the skills, still got your game on point. My question is, like, how are you balancing out being an awesome dad as well as being this awesome fighter?
During the pandemic.
You feel me? No, just trying to honestly keep my being focused of doing better and wanting better things, because I came from like a long line of not having much, you know. And I understand it's probably the same tune going on in a lot of people's heads, like, oh, I came from nothing and all this other stuff. But some people actually lived it and some actually didn't, and I'm one of those people that actually lived it, you know. So I already know when you have something, it could easily be taken, no matter how hard you fight for it and whatnot, it can easily be taken. So the only thing that you can do is honestly keep that job and constantly keep working. Like, you know, so every time I look at my boy, it's one of those situations. I want to make sure that he has everything and he doesn't have to ask anybody for nothing, you know, because I came that line where I wanted to ask, or I did. No one wanted to help. So I left it alone and just worked myself. And then I got to this moment that now everybody wants to help me. And it's one of those awkward coin flips of a life, but I got a lot of people that ends up saying, oh, I want to have your back and everything. And it's, I can play that line of like, where were you about 6 years ago, you know, when I really needed you. But it is,
you weren't with me shooting in the gym,
you feel me? R.I.P. rest in peace. That's amazing, man. But yeah, so straight up, so just like me managing it. And don't get me wrong, it's hard. Any father that says it ain't, you know, it's easy work, it's hard. You can be the guy with $1 million and still not function correctly around your child or your family type thing. Or you can have nothing and function really well, but the thing is, you don't have basically the funds to honestly push. So managing it, I'm doing my best, you know.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Do you ever think of your children in those dark moments in a fight?
Granted, I feel like I say no, but I have like corner men that will not, or, you know, will make sure I hear it. Like, say, for instance, I'm in a bad pickle because I ended up fighting like a lot of black belts and everything, you know. And majority of the black belts that I fought, like Kenan Barao, Chito Vera, Dos Santos, all put me in a pickle, right? And all you hear is in my corner, you know, hey, remember you're doing it for Eli. Like, you know, I'm in my first child and everything. And it's like, all right, you're right, get up, boom, you know. And then I'm back up there ready to automatically go again. But now, so, you know, it's just kind of like leveling it out with everything. So it ends up bringing me a smile. So even in my darkest moments, someone's bringing it up. So it makes me constantly keep pushing and don't give up, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So going back in the, I don't know, has the UFC even contacted you yet about fighting again? Or how do you feel about fighting during a pandemic? Obviously, you have kids at home. You don't want to get them sick. Has the UFC contacted you? Is anything in the works right now?
To be honest, right now, they actually contacted me twice. The first, right now, we're in the moment of finding like a matchup for me for my return. Fact is, and everybody knows that I basically went through 3 surgeries since February. And one was basically breaking my ulnar bone off the literally like the first 10 seconds of the fight with Martinez. Yeah. Ended up snapping that. And I think I made it worse because I continued to fight with it for 4 minutes and like 50 something change. So that ended up happening. And then on top of that, I received a bucket tear, which was last year on my right knee, got that worked on. And I think since I was overcompensating on one side, it ended up getting my left side done. So I ended up getting cleared last Tuesday or a week beforehand. So the whole Mitch match is right now is my manager, Dodge Sports, Matt, is on and Mike talking to Shelby. So they end up looking for like a good matchup that's going to be exciting for people to obviously tune in and be, you know, happy about. But the call I got beforehand, and I promise you, I was literally just 1 week before getting cleared, it was against Cody Stanman, number 12. So that was going to been a very interesting fight. But they ended up giving it to Brian Keller, which was actually a pretty cool fight.
Yeah. Do you want the slow burn? Like, do you want to actually fight people in the top 15, top 10? Or do you want to, you know, possibly fight another opponent, get another tune up, especially after your surgery? What's the game plan?
See, so right now, like, I know a lot of people are going to, like, butcher me on this. And I could hear, like, my professor right now. But truth be told, I have never been the type to honestly do any type of tune-up. Like, you know, the way that I end up, like, fighting, the way I end up moving, the way just how I am, I already know where I got to be. I'm here to automatically be loved, you know. So tune-ups is like, it's you can end up flushing that. And truth be told, anybody that's in the UFC ain't no tune-up fight. You got to end up understanding that. Like, a lot of people could be like, oh, he doesn't have this, but they're actually granted, gifted with something else, you know. Everything yeah. kind of like ends up floating on what it just suited for you and not suited for you. Like, you know, you can have like Conor McGregor, awesome striker, right? But his weakness is wrestling. People know that, you know. But if you give him good wrestling, he ends up standing with good wrestlers like Khabib and whatnot. Then you end up seeing a different type of fight. Just at the end of the day, all it takes is fighters to get a chance. As soon as they get that chance, they're not a tune-up fight. You know, like Martinez is not a tune-up fight. Like, you know, like they say, like Chito Vera, which one was like blossoming back then, but people ended up fighting him. You beat him, you're the man type thing, you know? Or the guy that O'Malley ended up fighting last time was his last fight with O'Malley. Does anybody know?
Oh my God.
I don't know, but he has the like super stash. He has
the boxer. 70s porn stash.
Yeah, so like him. Like they felt like, a lot of people are like kind of like butchering it, saying like, oh, Miley had like a tune-up fight or, oh, you know, like a walkthrough fight. But reality, that dude's actually legit. He's really good, you know. But it ended up going into those like, you know, predicament. It was O'Malley's night. He ended up doing what he does best and he won. But granted, a lot of people feel like he's a tune-up fight, but in a lot of other people's eyes, that dude's not a tune-up fight. He's a killer. So me, I say I fight anybody and everybody. And obviously, I want those numbers because, like, every number you know, it makes me end up happier every time because I'm trying to get closer to one, you know. And then obviously move up to my real weight class to 170 to fight everybody up in there, like my Perry, you feel me, Masvidal, Gilbert Burns, and, you know, Usman. I'm trying to go up. I'm working out.
You just named some big money fights. Let me ask you a question. You just brought up two gentlemen that are about to fight each other in your division, O'Malley versus Chito Vera. How do you see that fight going? I would imagine a guy like you that is gunning for that Vera fight back. I would love to see that again.
And they know, like, he knows what's up. It was just one of those, hey, it was his night, no type of excuse. But it's one of those situations, me and him got to run it back just for basically for the rights, as in respect. And, you know, it's one of those things. And when I say it's like bumping heads. It's so what most people would say, it's for the streets. Are you with me? We got to fight. Me and Chito got to fight for the streets. You feel me? But off on that fight, I already know it's going to end up being interesting. I say, if anything, O'Malley with a stoppage in the first round. But if it doesn't, I see Chito dragging him out, but probably might get robbed at the end, to be honest. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to end up butchering that, but I feel that if Chito ends up winning the fight, he ain't going to win the fight.
I think we can all agree on one thing, and one thing only. O'Malley needs to get rid of that haircut. Just saying. You need to get rid of the hair.
It's like the new thing, though.
It's like Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah, Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah.
He's like Tekashi 6ix9ine of the MMA.
Like, check it. Like, everybody, like, you know, in, like, different, basically different environments or in just in world period, right? O'Malley would be Tekashi type thing in the MMA. Me, I would be, again, because everybody constantly keep telling me, I'll be The Rock. Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a., you feel me, from, you know, I'll be the man, the people's champ. Everybody ends up having their style. Everybody has who they end up looking like, and I'm that guy. So, hey, let him be the rapper of the rappers and, you know, the jail stuff. And when he comes out, he's going to fly. He's going to fly.
They get stitches, right?
Andre, Andre, personally, I thought you had to be a snitch in order to qualify for that hair. So, like, I'm mind-blown that he actually has that haircut. You know, just say, hey, it's all your friends.
Hey, O'Malley might fit for it, man. But, you know, but, like, straight up, though, like, nothing but love to both of, you know, O'Malley and that fight. Like, it's going to end up being, like, full-on exciting. I already know O'Malley's style, he's going to keep it exciting. Chito, he's going to be there to make the fight exciting. So, how you end up looking at it, I take winner. And if they don't want to give it to me, hey, I'll take anybody else. I'll go with Stan Man. I'll give me another wrestler, a straight killer, jiu-jitsu, another black belt, or a straight banger that wants to throw hands. Obviously, I would love to have someone that won't like to throw hands, but if they don't give it to me, hey, it is what it is. I take what I get, you know? But I promise you, I'm going to make it exciting. And not only that, I'm getting back to my old ways because my knee's back. So meaning I don't have to end up moving away from a lot of things. Meaning I get to step forward and go forward and punch the We allowed to curse on here?
If you did, yeah. I'm sorry. Fucking please. Right,
I'm about to please don't fucking cuss.
All right, there it is. So, you know, keep it automatically excited, man. I'm here to make it exciting. Automatically, that's what I'm here to do. So,
and you're a fucking workhorse out there. And don't mind my fucking French, you know, now we're all cursing. But, like, you're a fucking workhorse. Three of your wins are actually by decision. And, you know how to grind on those opponents. You know how to pick apart. You know how to you know, kind of compute what's up with them. You know how to find a weakness, exploit it, and get the W. So now that everything's all recovered, everything's in shape, like everything's all in form, are you going to try to like modify your style a little bit? Do you want to go for the quick KO or do you want to keep, you know, absolutely, you know, being that articulate scientist in there and exploiting weaknesses, finding what makes them tick and going right for those weaknesses?
See, one, I love how you end up breaking it down because, like, a lot of people don't end up seeing the artwork when I'm in it, you know, like, I'm literally in there. truth be told, it's when I end up doing the picking apart, piecing, you know, finding what works and doesn't work, it was basically me, like, compensating on what was the flaw. And like I said, I had a bucket tear. Like, a wrong kick ends up locking my leg. I'm over here and basically in a situation, which actually happened when me and Chito ended up fighting. He ended up kicking it. My leg got locked. Which one to add in another pointer out there that whole camp and basically his, you know, the manager and whatnot, they all knew about like my whole knee and whatnot. But it is what it is. So now it's healed. we can end up talking now. So, granted of the situation, it is going to definitely change my mindset, because then I was more on the flow of, you know, not being touched, but, you know, connecting when I can connect, or connect when I wanted to connect. Now it's going to be more of on that, hey, we're going to press the fight, you know, and since I'm pressing it, I'm coming for something, you know? And that was the same thing. Like, I had that mentality with with Martinez, but ended up happening with the whole forearm broken type thing. But I still ended up making it exciting, trying to take his head off. But it was kind of hard just doing my left, because I'm actually naturally right-handed. But, you know, granted that I love throwing my left hand like crazy, but I'm actually naturally right-handed. Majority of my knockouts came from, like, a lot of my right hands, or at least the setup of it. But exactly how you end up placing it, it's going to be definitely changing where it's going to finish it. And then if you come up with those wrestlers, just know that I'm about to be chucking the shit out of them, because now I can actually roll. And they're going to end up learning today, like, you're not going to want to shoot on me. If you shoot on me, there's consequences. And if you don't shoot on me, there's consequences. So at the end of the day, you're getting these hands and kicks and chokes.
Just to clarify. 20-inch
biceps. They're going to get some of those.
Just to clarify what you said for maybe the audience that's slower that I attract. Basically, if like an analogy is like if a quarterback in the NFL injures their knee and they don't have the comfortableness in the pocket anymore to put weight on that knee to throw the pass. So they're back there kind of hesitant, and that's when they get sacked, or they hold the ball too long, or they throw an interception. Is it kind of like that when you have that knee issue?
Yeah, definitely.
You couldn't really trust it. Like that.
You know, like, people end up not understanding, like, in the fight game, you need everything, you know? And if it comes down, if you end up missing, you end up starting to adapt and basically you end up adapting to what's going on. Like, say, for instance, Mike Bisping had one eye, right? That means he had to end up putting extra, like, people don't end up understanding how much extra time he had to put in to practice to work with just one eye, like, you know? And then you have other people that, like, you know, so granted, I'm not the only one that ended up working with a torn muscle at the same time with a broken hand, you know? Literally, broke my left hand, like, multiple times. So there's a moment that I can't even ball up a full fist, right? So, hands down from, hold on, I'm trying to make this, get in the hammer. There we go. Like, I could make a full fist, but now on my left side. Can't make a full fist on it, but I'd still be punching the shit with it. And every fight, normally I end up breaking it or come damn near to spraining the shit out of it. Something ends up happening. I broke it about 5 times in like 5 different fights. And that's including hitting Burrell, going back before the whole UFC, against Trent Moe, Gustavo Lopez. You know, it's just one of those situations where you just honestly adapt and you're honestly used to. Like me, I'm used to, you know, things being broken in me, adapting and moving around it, you know. But when it comes to bucket tears, that's like a different world, man. It's just a different world.
So go
ahead, David.
Oh, no. What were you saying, Justin? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'd imagine that with all those injuries and stuff, that at some point in your journey, there had to have been a doctor that said, don't fight anymore.
2 feet tall.
What? Take us to that moment.
A lot of these doctors, right? And a lot of them, like, you know, they know that this is your life and, you know, like, granted, when I came in to the doctor for my 3 surgeries and whatnot, the doctor, he just ended up, like, giving me nothing but praises and just, like, you know, he ended up, but like this, he made me feel very comfortable on the fact that he knows, like, this is my life, like, you know, because a lot of people to these days don't, you know, they end up taking an injury, they walk away, they don't come back, they, you know, they turn a whole nother cheek in the whole lifestyle, right? And for me, it's a normal thing, you know? Like, granted, like, I ended up breaking my hand. I'm not gonna lie, it was, like, one fight that, it was literally 2019, all right? The beginning of, no, 2018, my apologies. When I ended up fighting Gustavo, I broke my hand in the fight, right? And I went to Vegas with, like, the super lump that was, like, kind of, like, chilling on my hand. And I ended up getting a call of the fight for the LFA fight. And I was like, yeah, I want to fight. But, you know, my brother and cousin were like, nah, you know, you broke your hand, just heal that, et cetera, you know. And then they ended up sending me the guy's name, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, I can beat him with one hand. And they looked at the video, and they said, yeah, Drake can beat him with one hand. So we ended up saying yeah to the fight. We ended up, you know, calling my coach or whatnot. They ended up setting it, so we ended up making it happen. And all I had to do was get cleared. But the funny moment was the doctor that told me that I was supposed to take, like, some time off or at least get my hand checked never sent the paper in. So since the paper never got sent in, I went in and said, hey, I'm here to check out my right hand, which was my left hand. That was the problem. I went in and checked my right hand, and he looked at it. He was like, yeah, your hand's good. So I ended up fighting that fight. So your boy was, like, in there. So I saw, that was, like, the super laughter of life.
Kobe.
Kobe. R.I.P. Rest in peace, my brother. But, yeah.
So the main question I want to ask you, too, and going back to my original question was, like, especially in the Martinez fight and the Santos fight, like, you see an intelligent fighter out there, an articulate fighter, a scientist, someone that's going to find your weaknesses and exploit them. And I have this argument with MMA fans all the time where, you know, to the untrained eye, you know, going to a decision, it's fucking boring, which, you know, I see it as, you know, I see a methodical Yeah, I see a methodical performance out there. A lot of people say, oh, I want a fucking KO and submission and blah, blah, blah. Like, do you have to change your style of being the scientist out there, or do MMA fans need to educate themselves a little bit more?
I say it's in the middle. And all I'm saying, like, in the middle, and I know, like, a lot of people, it's yes or no, but I'm saying it's in the middle. The fact is in that we have situations where you have people who are just born. Are you with me? And these are, like, a lot, like, you got to think about it, like, how many undefeated fighters out there are still not in the UFC. They could be like 20-0, but not in the UFC. And the only reason is that they're born. Like, right. Yeah, hey, I'm choking people out, but not everybody wants to see someone just getting choked out, you know? Because they already have enough people that are just choking people out. And then at the same time, you have where not a lot of people just want to see one club punch, because everybody knows you can club punch the mess out of everybody and knocking everybody out, and that's exciting. But as soon as they put you in the fight with someone that actually can take that club punch, you're just that one person that had one club punch, and now you just got choked out. Like, you know, like, put like this. Does anybody remember when Tony, the boxer, ended up coming into the MMA?
James Tony.
Against Ray Couture. Yes.
So you remember. So
he was talking mad shit, too.
Yeah, running his mouth. He's a boxer. He basically had, like, don't get me wrong, he had the full skills, but in MMA, in their eyes, he only had that one club punch. He got taken down in, like, literally the first, like, 5 seconds.
Ankle pick.
And that was the end of the fight, right?
Boxer on his back.
Yeah, just like that. Fish on the water. Hey. A fish out of water, you know? So it's like, well, those situations like that where you can, like, go off that adapting, but it's about what you're bringing into the table, like, you know? Because we have, like, a lot of boring people, and then we have a lot of exciting people. And granted, like, I went three or four rounds with, like, you know, three of the fighters. I kept it exciting every round, because every round that I go in, it's not only me keeping it or being smart about it. I'm honestly looking for situations to hurt my opponent, and not only hurt my opponent, expose my opponent, break down my opponent, basically pull their will. Type thing. And then at the same time, also letting everybody know I got stamina. So when I jump up, or when they put me in the UFC game, my stamina better be up there. You feel me? At the top, not the bottom, the top, because that's where I'm at with it. But it comes out to that moment where you do want to adjust. You know, you kind of want to end up feeding to the crowd by keeping it exciting, you know, looking for knockouts, looking for submissions. But at the same time, the fans going to have to also try to adapt to the situation where they understand, hey, you know, they got to do certain things, like, you know, and we got to understand that they got to do certain things, because you might come up in there with somebody like, again, I broke an arm, or it was the chick that ended up tearing, like, both of her ACL and MCL, and couldn't end up fighting, but still finished the fight. And it was like, it ended up becoming boring, but she still finished the fight. I forgot the lady's name. I feel like it's Amanda, or it starts with Amanda. At 125, does anybody know? Sure.
No.
Not Amanda Rivas, right? No.
No, I don't think so.
What, did Amanda Rivas just fight recently?
I believe so.
We got a really – here's a random question from Brian Morley for you. What Australian UFC fighter would you want to fight besides Mark Hunt?
All of them.
Especially Mark Hunt.
I'll take every British fighter or Australian fighter. My apologies. I'll take them all. And when I'm out there, I need the same love. Tell them, don't be shy to give me the same love.
How do you see the landscape, though, right now in your division? I mean, Peter Yan just, you know, had that stoppage of Aldo that should have stopped seven blows earlier, in my opinion. But then you got, Aljamain Sterling, Cody Garbrandt coming back, the Snake, if he's done. TJ Dillashaw coming back in January. Yourself, a lot of killers.
Well, a lot of killers, but in my eyes, I feel like I'm like kind of like sway this thing. Sterling needs to be having the title fight. Like, I feel like really bad. Like, they constantly keep ignoring him or trying to push him to the side. And this is that moment I was telling you about being exciting and not exciting. Like, Sterling is exciting. It's just the situation where he's at. It's that he doesn't have that full following base that will bring out pay-per-views like that. But the thing is, if they actually give him that chance, he could be that pay-per-view type person. Like, you know, like, granted, he fights for the belt, he'd be the pay-per-view dude, period. But in the weight class, you know, you got, like you said, Peter Yan, Aldo, Cody Garbrandt, you know, Mike Perry, Gilbert Burns, you know, Usman, basically off the list of...
Not Mike fighters. Perry. His girlfriend fights at 135. You don't want a piece of her. You know, Mike Perry. Like Mike said, Perry fights at 170, and I'm surprised.
That's what we're talking about. I'm 170. I'm not
again. Oh yeah, that's because you're right. You're taking over welterweight.
You feel me? The 20 inches right here.
People, dude, I thought Mike Perry fought 70-year-olds.
You see? Ooh.
Listen, I can help Mike quit drinking, and then you guys can fight.
Hey. Yeah, or if I got to start drinking, one or the other, we can fight. One of the two. You feel me? Flip a coin. But no, like that weight class, I already know everybody's excited, man. Or at least the number again from like 15 and down. You know, it'll be interesting. The card could stack. Some people that are like in the rankings need to be taken off because, you know, of non-activity. Some are just up in there just doing, you know, just enjoying life and, you know, being happy of being a number. But they need to go ahead and move and let somebody else like move up or move in.
They're not on the grind like you, a lot of those
guys. You feel me? Be on the grind. That's what I'm trying to tell them. Be on the grind. Keep it exciting. Be on the grind. You know, be like me. It's not like me. Keep, you know, keep on pushing. Do something else. You know, let's keep it exciting.
So you know, having an exciting style like your style, who would be an ideal fight to come back to?
If I could have it any way I want, Song.
Yep.
Song. That'll be like an awesome fight. He's excited, and I'm excited. He's explosive. I'm explosive. We have basically similar styles, but the difference is my height and range, and him being impact and or you know smaller and with a nice ass impact type of flurry. If you end up looking at it, but very similar. Like our styles is very explosive. I don't know if you end up knowing that it's like very explosive and. I feel like me and him will keep it exciting. But even if it doesn't go to him, we have basically, like I said, we have that Cody situation. We got a Sanzo. That'll end up being a good fight, you know, for me. Like, and I'm naming, like, numbers. Obviously, running back with me and Chito, but he's not in the number no more because they booted him out. O'Malley, obviously, would be an awesome fight. I can honestly constantly keep naming. But, if you place names on there, I feel like, hey, we're looking at it. Like, even got, like, Rob Font. Like, you know, me and him can automatically be an exciting fight. They end up pushing down even less of that. Obviously, I would love to have a Cody versus me fight, but I already know he's going to end up feeling like he's top dog. But, obviously, I got to get up there to be the top dog to fight the top dog, I guess. You feel me? And then, granted, TJ gets his ass back. That would be a good fight, too.
You feel like the time that TJ's had off is going to benefit him? I remember Uriah Faber saying that he feels like this suspension time is actually going to make him a better fighter.
Wait, who are we talking about? TJ?
TJ.
Right now, I can say yeah to it, but then again, I can kind of go back. It's kind of like, is he end up going to be stuck on being the guy that just does a club punch? And my bad, I just done question right now, my favorite submission, I'll go ahead and say the darts, because I've been like literally been like stuck on like nothing but jits and everything, and I've been darting the mess on a lot of my teammates, you know.
And especially on the shoot. I noticed you lock the darts up quick on the shoot, man.
Yeah, so it's like everything's like been sliding in. I'm like setting it up perfectly, and even if it comes down to me not even finishing off with the darts, they'll come into being a Kimura or triangles. But reality, just jits and period, it's like awesome. I actually just love just rolling nowadays. Yeah, everybody's up in there like folding me up like pretzels. Like me and Jalen went at it this morning. Jalen Turner, if anybody knows.
Yeah, or
definitely know about Jalen Turner. Yeah, me and him were going at it. You know, he was like folding me up like a pretzel, but I got one in today.
That's a victory against that. Yeah. He's a beast.
Oh, no, so, 100%. I love working with Jalen. Every time he's up in there, he keeps me on my toes. And it's one of those like scrambling games. Like when me and him go at it, you know, it's like power of, you know, like nothing but like a lot of scrambling, us like moving, scrambling, and it keeps me up on my toes. I remember like when I came back from my injury and everything and went into like the whole scrambling, be scrambling with him, I kept on like falling into something bad. It'd be like a triangle, you know, heel hook or something into that category. But now, like, your boy got a scrambling game back again. So, you know, so now it's just like two UFC fighters basically doing wrestling. It's kind of awesome. Yeah. So nothing but points to my boy Jalen.
So as a fighter, obviously you have to be a fan of the sport. So what fight, from a fan standpoint, are you looking forward to the most? And why is it Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr.?
Yeah, why?
Why Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr.? Because there was a fight that was supposed to happen a long time ago. And obviously that would probably be the fight that I'm like looking forward to. But at the same time, I don't want it to happen because Roy Jones is my favorite boxer. And Mike Tyson is an awesome person and also one of my favorite fighters, you know. And so it's like two talented, awesome people just in general. And, you know, living two different type of lifestyles. But those two, like, you know, when it ends up coming in the matching together, like, I don't want to see it to happen. But I already know that just the fact is in the person that Tyson have became today, that I don't think anybody should feel, like, too worried of anybody getting hurt type thing, you know. So I feel like that should automatically be suited. But, again, for me, ideal matchup, it will be me versus Max. That would be, like, something that would be awesome. Max Holloway, because the one he likes to strike, he ain't going to shoot. He's just going to, you know, he's going to throw with me. And I can already see it. It's going to be me or him in the center of the octagon talking about meet me here. And that's why I feel like me and Max would automatically make fireworks. But obviously, I got to get there so you know, we can make that happen. Make that one like beyond awesome and amazing. I say a year and a half, me and Max will be in talk of a fight. Maybe less.
I completely disagree with you, by the way, Andre. I'm scared for Roy Jones.
I wouldn't be.
But look, crazy. I want y'all to end up looking at it like this. You got to end up understanding. If it was the old mentality, Mike Tyson, then we're talking different story. But we're talking about a Tyson like 9 times out of 10. I'm telling you, like he'll go up in there and probably go at about 70 to 80%. Like they'll turn it into a full boxing match. And it'll come into this moment, if he does clip him hard, that he'll catch him and hold him up, and it'll be one of those moments.
Yeah,
You know, so like, that's why I'm saying, like, it's going to be one of those matches, like, the difference of how much Mike Tyson has grown of being a completely different person. Like,
don't get me wrong. Right.
Yeah, like, yeah, don't get me wrong. He hit hard, like, you know, and Roy, it'll be like a sparring match.
I just can't envision exhibition Tyson. I don't know that Tyson. I know 150 miles per hour or nothing.
See, look. So now all you got to do is look at this. There's an expedition Tyson when he ended up fighting one of these fans. Like, you know,
I beat him in 85.
Look, so it was like one of those like super fans. They jumped in the ring with him, and he ended up like really clipping him. Like, it was on an accident, but he ended up, like, clipping him.
And he caught him. I remember that.
Yeah, he, like, fall. He, like, he was falling, and Tyson, like, caught him, like, oh, hey, you know. And this is a person like he didn't put no power into it or whatnot. It's just it felt like it was power because it was coming from Tyson, you know. But he caught him. Now picture it being Roy Jones. One, Roy Jones ain't just gonna walk into something like that. And two, if he does get caught like that, Tyson's gonna catch him. You know, it's gonna be one of those things like they're gonna catch him and they'll end up flowing. It's gonna be a flow match with a probably get like one or two serious rounds. But after those two serious rounds, it'll be them flowing.
So what I'm most excited about, and I was actually rewatching Roy Jones Jr. in the Olympics when he took the silver medal, and obviously he got fucked. He should have been the gold medalist. I think Roy Jones Jr. is still dangerous. But besides that, they're not allowing knockouts. They're not. It's going to be completely exhibition rules where no knockouts. There's no knockouts.
How can you control that?
I have no idea, but I have a way. I figured out a way where we can get a knockout. And Gabe, thank you for joining us. The goat himself, the man. So I figured out a way where Mike Tyson will allow knockouts. Okay, so we take away Mike Tyson's weed. 24 hours before it happens, Mike Tyson starts hunting humans for sport and he kills people. What do you think?
The future cage
basically.
Fighter.
Yeah, that could
probably
be something.
Roy Jones's jaw is done, and there's just no way that you cannot get. How can you say that there's not going to have knockouts? Tyson hits like a freaking freight train, and Roy Jones's jaw, as much as I love Roy in his prime, was the man. That's just ridiculous. Oh, oops, I broke the rules. I knocked out. What can I do?
The WEC champ has spoken. My job is done here.
Exactly.
See? That looks so like, I can go ahead and just say it. It's just that one side. Like Tyson is a very passive person. So it's just, it's going to be like a coin flip. You're going to have to flip the coin on that one.
Mike Tyson gets hit hard enough. Mike Tyson's going to go fucking crazy. He's going to go for the kill. And Roy Jones Jr., as a fighter, and you know this better than anybody, the chin's the first thing to go. Look at Chuck Liddell. A gust of wind, and his body goes into shutdown mode because his body thinks, oh, shit, I'm getting hit again and hitting over and over and over again. And he goes right back to 1996 when he fought in Vale Tudo in Brazil, and his body goes into complete shutdown mode. So Roy Jones Jr. is at that state. My biggest fear is Roy Jones Jr. hitting Mike Tyson hard enough to piss off Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson is going to get fucking crazy, and he's going to start killing people. Like, that's my biggest fear with Mike Tyson.
That's why I will not film that fight.
See? Now, I don't know. That making it. I can see that. I definitely can see that. But,
What do you think?
This thing is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's no way that, look, if you put hands on someone, he may not even be punching with full fat power, but if you hit somebody in the right spot and your jaw is done, your jaw is done. And Roy has been knocked out by guys that don't have the power that Tyson has.
Guys that dream to have Tyson's power have knocked out Roy Jones. I would disagree with you, David, that the chin is not the first thing to go. I think speed and reflexes are the first thing to go, and I think they go over in one night in the ring. Bert Sugar used to always say that reflexes and speed are the first thing to go. That's why that night that Tarver caught him, he didn't quite get out of the way like he had every time before. The last thing to leave is power. George Foreman will still punch you into the 10th row. So Tyson still has that power. Roy Jones's chin and the speed and reflexes are long gone.
I can see. Now I don't know, man. I'm telling you, I feel that these two are going to carry each other all the way through 8 rounds.
Really?
That's possible. That is possible. It could be like, look, we're gonna sit here, we're both old men, let's not get too hard in this. But there's always that shot. It could be that shot that just ends it.
Yeah, change the world.
Or like Dave said, what if he gets hit hard and click, we got 1988 Tyson?
Yeah.
He could get punched back at the 1988 title. See that? I can see that. You know,
the only man that could beat 1988 Mike Tyson is Glass Joe.
Yeah.
Get him back to the remote. Get him back to the remote. I see you.
From a box like a boxing fan standpoint, I think the entire event is just nostalgia. Like, these guys should have fought back in the 90s. Like, without question, Roy Jones Jr. was supposed to fight Mike Tyson. This would have been a great fight. Roy Jones Jr. was going up and down left and weight classes and dominating every single one of them. Like, I think the greatness of this event is it provides nostalgia and nothing more. I don't need to see any of my greats getting knocked down or knocked out or anything. Just spar her for a little bit. You know, so spar for 8 rounds, put on the headgear. You know, let me see Roy Jones Jr. do his little shimmy. And, like, you know, call it a night, you know?
David, you're completely on point. You guys remember when it was either the MTV Awards or it was the BET Awards in, like, 2000. It was right after Roy Jones moved up to heavyweight and put on a masterpiece against John Ruiz. And they had Tyson and Roy Jones face off at this award show. You guys remember this?
I also remember because I remember the fact is in that he weighed into that thing and he weighed on the scale at 199 like point something.
Yeah.
And he got off and he was mad, right? He was like, yeah, don't think I ain't 200 pounds. Like, you know, like I weigh 200 pounds, that scale is off. It's like wrong, you know? And he was like going on a rant, like, yeah, I'm 200 pounds. Like, yeah, he thinks I'm 199, but 200 pounds is going to be hitting him, right? And that fact, off on that night, that fight, that was one amazing performance of what he did, right?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable for him to move up, and they're supposed to set up the whole Mike Tyson thing. But the situation that happened was he went back down to fight Tarver, and when he made that move, like, I don't know if anybody knows, like, Roy was definitely, like, on that – the stuff, the drugs, everything. All you can go ahead. He rapped about it. He let everybody know about it. He ended up speaking on it. And he was telling, like, he made a song about it. Like, I ain't going to stop the puffing, stop for nothing, the whole nine, you know. So it ended up opening up the door that he ended up cutting from 200 pounds, that he did everything he could to get to 200 pounds. Like, people need to understand, like, he was doing a lot of eating, a lot of weight training. Like, he was bulking up, and it was like,
he looked great at heavyweight.
Yeah, there you go. And so now you go ahead and do that, and then basically 2 months later, you're cutting back down to 170 to fight Tarver.
Yeah, not helping.
You beat him, that should have been it. That should have been literally the done part. But he did a rematch, and Roy Jones normally don't do rematches, and he won't give somebody a rematch, and that was like the downfall. And that's one thing I'm a fan of Floyd Mayweather. Floyd don't rematch anybody unless the world really feel like, unless he felt like he really lost. And that's only two people that end up ever rematching.
I had this argument within one of our podcasts where Roy Jones Jr. should have retired after he fought Antonio Tarver the first time. Like, I remember the Roy Jones Jr. in 2002 when he came out with a rap record, and then 2 months later, he's rapping his own song, coming out with all those girls and dancing with those girls, and you know, he beats the guy, he starches the guy, but then all that confidence completely melts away with his first fight with Antonio Tarver. And he won a decision, a close decision, and it might have gone the other way with Tarver. That second fight should have never happened. Roy Jones Jr. should have protected his legacy. He should have retired right after that first fight.
And it's not even, not only, if you're not retired, if you did do another rematch, tell him to move up weight. Now you feel a little bit more comfortable at 185. Because guess what? He, at that time, after he like re-blew back up, he was probably at the, you know, the 190s. So him recutting back down to 70 to fight him again, I would ended up just saying, hey, meet me at 185, or you're going to have to move up to heavyweight with me. Because everybody knows Roy Jones at heavyweight, he's able to move and box. So just little small things like that, man.
You know when that fight
ended? You said, Robbie?
When that second Antonio Tarver Roy Jones fight ended was when he did the most gangster shit in a pre-fight stare down ever. You got any excuses tonight, Roy? Remember that?
Yep.
And yeah.
So let me ask you.
We should have said, "You're right. I got to leave." That's what Roy should have did. I got to go home. Bye bye.
Yeah, that was like I thought the fight was over right then. Has anybody ever done anything like that to you or have you done anything that gangster before a fight? Same question to the former WEC champ, Gabe Rudiger, our co-host. Has anybody ever done some – I mean, that's just like – talk about mental warfare. I mean, if you go back and look at that stare down, it's like the fight leaves Roy before the fight started.
Yeah. Truth be told, like, never end up having that. Like, no, you know, granted, like, you know, it's like a lot of challenging. I've been challenged. I've been challenged a lot. Like, some of the fighters are fighting this weekend and fought, like, a few weeks ago all challenged me. But reality, nothing came into being that deep. I feel like the only one that will end up coming to that into that situation, it'll be me versus Chito. I can tell you that. That would probably be the only one that most people hear me like talk shit or will talk shit or just me get out of, I'm not saying out of character, but me speak out of that term of, hey, you know, I don't know, just like I'm not too much fans of people that end up not really fully giving out respect to other opponents type thing, you know. So, or doing racial slurs and stuff like that to make them feel better. But
not necessary.
Yeah, it's not necessary at all.
Yo, I like when I was fighting, I was always respectful. I never wanted like, look, we're gonna fight. You know what I mean? I don't have anything to say to you before that. We're gonna get in the ring and you're either gonna beat me or I'm gonna beat you, right? There's nothing nothing you can say that's gonna throw me off my game. There's nothing that I'm gonna say to you that's gonna make this more of a fight. I had one dude like tell me beforehand that like if I fought for the WC title, the guy I fought told me him and his brother were gonna take me to the desert and kill me.
God damn.
And I get that's out of here, man. Right, okay. Hey, say what you want to say. Hey, he wasn't taking anything to the desert. He was asleep for 3 minutes afterwards.
You see? And then that's like the funny part about it too. It's like you're sitting there, like I said, he's like you're sitting there, you're talking shit and all this other stuff. It's like you're trying to get me to fight you, but we're already about to fight. Why are you trying
exactly
to get me to fight? We're about to fight.
Trust me, like any of that nonsense, like in the stare down and everything. Tomorrow we're doing this. You don't need to present anything. Like we're going to fight. Like you're not getting in my head. I already signed a contract months ago. Yeah, let's go.
And it's like, okay. Yeah, I just want to let him know I'm trying to get him off the game. And I was like, I don't think he's really off his game because he knows he's fighting. It's like his mentality. You guys are fighting.
Exactly. Yo, man, like. Yeah, actually, this is a funny one. When I fought Jason Maxwell for my second WC title defense, Jason came into the stare down just like mad dogging me like crazy, like just getting in my face. And all I did is I smile. I go, hey, man, I'm thank you so much for taking this fight. I appreciate it. You know, I'm all smiles. And he was just like, what? And I was like, yeah, man, no, thank you. I appreciate it. And after I beat him, he came up to me and goes, that whole night afterwards, I didn't know why you were smiling. I didn't understand. And I kept talking in my corner. And I was like, look, we were going to fight. Like, there's nothing you can do. You're not in my head. I know I'm going to fight you. Like, get out of here, that nonsense.
So it backfired on him.
I
don't know. I mean, look, he lost. I don't. He can say that's the reason why he lost. I mean, my feeling is the fight is the fight. What happens in the fight is what's going to happen, right? There's no pre-fight bravado that's going to change where I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to fight this guy anymore. Oh, man, he looked mean. I know what you bring to the table, and I'm preparing to fight another man. So, I don't care who you are. Like, honestly, like you could be King Kong. And I'm prepared to fight you. Let's go.
I would talk a lot of shit to King Kong in the hopes that something. David. Also, has anybody ever talked shit to you? Because
Personally, Andre, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think that the stare downs are like the Mortal Kombat select screen. And I don't want to gaze in my opponent's eyes ever so deeply. And like stare him down like I'm mad at him. And I did the amateurs and I used to laugh during stare downs because I thought they were so fucking ridiculous. Like, dude, I'm not mad at you. Like, I think you should be cut out of the equation. I think it's not necessary. You know, I don't know how you feel about that, Andre, but like,
I love the stare downs because sometimes it could get awkward and you know, like put it like this. If you like, you end up like staring me down. Like I probably had like one awkward moment of a stare down that I was against with Cheeto, because when he ended up having his fist, he put his like whole fist like in my armpit, right? And it was like awkward.
So, like, kinda had to be, like, and then he was like this.
So I'm like, hold on, you know, like so you know it was like low key, like my fist had to be like lifted and shit. I don't know, it was just like mad awkward. But
that's really weird.
Yeah, it really was. And but you know, but it lightens up some of the situations, but at the same time, you know people love a good stare down, because you know it tells a story back in the future, like, oh, you see these two right here, this is what happens. And you know, it goes right into the whole, you know, mismatch, and, or not the mismatch, but what's going on in the cage or the ring or whatnot. You know, it ends up bringing a good story, but they should just do everything on like silent, where people don't end up talking shit.
So going back to what we're originally talking about, obviously we talked about Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. We talked about all these great fighters, but from boxing, MMA, you know, obviously you have heroes, people that you looked up to. Mine is Bruce Leroy because he has the glow. But who would be like your dream fight to compete against, or somebody you would compete against?
Dream fight? Truth be told, as if we're talking like now, dream fight. Obviously, I know like a lot of people end up saying like Bruce Lee, but I think Bruce Lee would be like that dream fight that I would end up love having. Just if I just saying, because you know, like majority of what I do and stuff that I do, period, it's very similar, or you know, it's me like following a lot of his ways, and obviously tweaking it to make it my way, because his whole style is making it your style, you know. So Bruce Lee would be a person I would love to just even move with, move around with, or just even pick his brain, you know, like face to face. So that'd be a stylistic. But if we're talking about as in cage, and we ain't talking about the past, we're talking like now, it would definitely be Cormier.
Cormier.
Just the fact that when I tuck my shirt in, look, when I tuck my shirt in, I'm DC. You feel me? I'm the wrestler. So that would be like a freaking interesting and very fun type of fight. Or even like me and him wrestling, just period. Like, you know, I'm a wrestler. People don't have to understand. I'm a wrestler now.
Don't do that to yourself. I got in a fight in second grade. It was my last fight. And it was against a fourth grade kid that ate a lot more than me. And he just laid on top of me.
He got to catch me, baby. He got to catch me.
In front of everyone.
You got to understand that. DC got to catch me first. And I'm out here shooting like crazy. I'm taking people down. I'm just letting you know. I had, like, if y'all don't believe me, go ahead and check on my videos. I was over wrestling 190-something pounds and taking them down. And, look, I'm the man when it comes to wrestling now. When my shirt is tucked in, my persona kicks out. And my persona is Cormier. Boom.
And
Cormier is a bit bigger than 190, though.
He is.
That's a big one.
It's so interesting that you brought up Bruce Lee as your dream fight, and one of our viewers actually said, "Be water," and that was his whole philosophy: be water. You know, like it can flow, it can crash, and like be adaptable. In every single fight, you see yourself being every single round being adaptable and actually adapting to what your opponents actually bring to you, which it makes so much fucking sense now. Like watching your fights and actually, you know, that's the guy. Is that your hero? That's the guy you emulated.
Yeah, people that like that's like literally my hero, cause like growing up, literally like this is the box TV, all right, like where you ended up only having like a certain amount of channels, and for some odd reason they have one Asian channel, they have this like blurry type channel that's like channel 24/23, and that one would be like that awkward porn.
I remember that channel.
You know that awkward porn where you see like a foot. And
hell yeah.
Like, you know, that little awkward show. And it'll be like, you know, the regular basic as in like 3, 5, 11. And on the Asian show, it always came on Bruce Lee or Dragon Ball Z. And at the time, it was like nothing but, you know, into their type of language and whatnot. So I just got very used to just watching it. So I'm actually really surprised that I'm not like fluent in like Mandarin or, you know, Japanese or just anything, period. Like, you know, like I got a study because I was like literally back then, like watching it, Like, it was like one of those things, like, I watched like every day. And it was Bruce Lee. They had it on reruns. And, you know, and then late night, about like 1 o'clock in the morning, they'll just throw on Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball GT or Dragon Ball. It was one of the so I was sitting there watching it. And that's where you kind of ended up practicing and trying to do it. And then you end up understanding, like, hey, I want to be something like that. And, you know, growing up, I was always like fighting. And my pops always telling me, hey, you're light skinned, so you better learn how to fight. So it was one of those things you just mashed together. I was like one of those kids. I didn't have like the best. So cartoons was what brought smiles to my face. Didn't have that many friends. Like, I don't know. But it happens.
Yeah, man. So we're about to wrap it up with you. And obviously, you have a busy night ahead of you. And so last questions for Justin. Last questions from Gabe.
I'd like to know what that moment was that you knew that you had a gift. Like, what was that backyard story where some kid, like, where, you know, I just picture some of you guys having this moment where you punch somebody down the hallway of school and you're like, oh, you know, the light shines down from heaven. And there's this understanding.
That's funny. Or my light was when my mom told me I need to jump up into it. Like, my mom was like, hey, I think you should start fighting. And I'm like, yeah. Like, you know, like when parents tell you something, you know, it just goes through one ear out the other. And she like literally registered that into me where I ended up going to boxing. And she was like, hey, that's cool. But I wasn't really talking about boxing. I was talking about you actually jumping in the cage. Like, I think you had that gift. And, you know, what they always say, mamas are right. You know, you just got to listen to your mama. And eventually it kind of came into that. And where I honestly like pushed forward for it was the whole court system of not feeling unvalued. You know, judge looking at me with no value. So I just said, hey, I have to figure out something I'm great at. And I went back to what my mama told me. My mama told me, hey, this is something, or this is your calling. And there you go.
Much respect.
So, say it
again. Much respect, bro. Yeah, I already respected you, but after talking to you, whole nother level of respect.
Thank you. And answering that question of that last Facebook question, I figured out is 2000 and... Basically, 2016, it was when I actually said, all right, I'm going to decide to punch people in the face. And at least in the cage part. Boxing is a different story. It's when I saw Roy Jones in person.
All right, Gabe, last questions.
I don't have any, man. I came in late. I was on baby duty. I'm a little behind the curve today, so... I have no questions on my end.
That's all, gravy. Thank you.
Edwin, obviously. I'm glad I got to talk to you a little bit, man. So, Andre, I have a lot of respect for you and your career and what you have accomplished. And any last words, anything you want to shout out, anything we have to look forward to, I leave the floor to you, my man.
Oh, shout out to basically my manager group, you know, Matt Dodge and or Dodge Sports. Make sure you guys check them out. You can end up clearly jumping on Safari and type it in Googling Dodge Sports or my sponsor, Dynasty MMA, which is an amazing clothing line, gear, and, you know, et cetera. You know, I'm like, this is a whole extra reason why they constantly keep calling me the Dragon Fist, you know, of the sport, because Dynasty MMA brings out the best in me. You with me? And then obviously shout out Health and Body Nutrition and Biotech, everybody, Purekana, everybody that's honestly just following and just following the story of me. And, you know, nothing but love for my whole team. So one shout out to even you guys, Fight Mixer, appreciate y'all having me and, you know, and showing me nothing but love and keeping me basically comfortable in my own room.
Andre, you're the man. I can't wait for your next fight. I'm going to definitely be tuning in. We're all going to be tuning in and rooting for you. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Nothing but love until next time.
Peace. Peace out.
What a cool guy. Man.
Wow. Great show we had so far, baby.
I'm running late. I didn't realize he was a California fighter.
How was your vacation? Yeah.
What's that?
How was your vacation? Tell us all about it.
Oh, it was great. I mean, we're in the desert, just me and the wife, and, you know, we got to watch rabbits and bats and wildlife and relax in a cabin out in the middle of nowhere. It was great.
I hear there was a lot of meth out there, though.
Yeah, was there a lot of meth?
Quite a bit. We went and did a meth tasting. I went to like five different...
a meth tasting. We were there for weeks.
We sampled all the goods throughout the Valley.
I've never smelled meth, but I heard it smells great.
I don't think I've ever smelled it.
Did you go to like a meth billard? And you're like, hmm.
I didn't know that it burned out. So you went to the meth tender?
It was you know what? If there was any meth, and there was a time I had to go to the store, that I guarantee you that I went around to people that did a meth tasting. I was thankfully not around the very much. Okay. I gotta tell you though,
that's the one thing you don't have in South Florida is meth. We got everything else. The desert here is meth.
I've never went meth hunting in Florida, but.
I've never been meth hunting in Florida, but I haven't lived very long.
I'll say this. The desert at night is absolutely gorgeous. Yep. Absolutely gorgeous at night. Yeah. I mean, like when the sun goes down, you see it come down. It just puts this like purple and pink hue over the whole valley. And then like we saw little bats every night that would come and feed at the pool. It was amazing. Amazing.
I'm not down with the bats, but let me ask you about the night desert. Was it cold at night?
No. I mean, dude, it's like 98 during the day, so it's probably like 70. It's comfortable. I mean, one night we got in the hot tub and had some drinks in the hot tub, and you know, the bats are like this big, dude. They're not enough to even make a sandwich out of. Like they're tiny. Like, they're tiny little make things.
A sandwich out of.
Well, no, that's what COVID-19 started from, eating bats. They're too tiny to even eat. Like, the tiny little things. Like
there's nothing like, having like a nice plethora of meth and then switching over to bat sandwiches.
So, that sounds like the worst high ever. Meth in the desert and there's little bats flying everywhere. They're not good for sandwiches, but we can dunk them in sauce.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, good point. Thankfully, we decided not to do the meth tasting. There was a meth tasting for it, but we opted out of it.
So we have Kamahama Worthy coming on to the podcast in just about 4 minutes.
Yeah, I seen him. He popped in for a second, and I don't know if he was readjusting his camera or whatnot, but he's about ready, I think.
Can't wait, man. Big win over Lewis Penny. I know. So, I can't wait to talk to him. I'm excited.
The only thing that Luis Pena has over Kamahama Worthy right now is nickname.
Oh, yeah. The
Death Star?
Violent Bob Ross.
Violent Bob Ross. Probably.
That's a pretty good nickname.
Dude, that's like. Yeah.
Well, Penny's got this. Yeah, that one you
here. I just the nickname.
It's called the Black Santa Claus.
I'm going to paint this happy little meth bat.
doesn't Penny, he trains with Daniel Cormier. He trains with all those guys. They came from the Ultimate Fighter, right?
True, Pena, yeah. But now he's down at ATT Coconut Creek. I see him all the time. I see him like a few times a month. He's always all there. Right. Always.
You got those sources, my friend. And Justin, happy birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Justin, my boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we missed that one. We got it yesterday, but
I appreciate you guys.
I'm just glad he showed up.
Me too.
Oh,
me too, bro. And listen, that's 90% of success, and that's why I'm not successful.
we're asking if I visited a bud tender. What is a bud tender? Does anybody know what that is?
Bud tender.
What the fuck's a bud tender?
Marijuana?
It's like a bartender with bud.
Yeah.
There was actually surprisingly a lot of dispensaries out in that area.
Surprisingly.
No. I did not go to a butt tender.
You didn't pick up something to the road, you know what I'm saying? You didn't, you know, no, nothing? Didn't roll for the Magical Mystery Tour?
Sorry, what's that?
Didn't go to one of those dispensaries for your vacation, you know what I'm saying?
When the kids went to
school. I don't know what I do. we had mostly alcoholic beverages, our adult beverages. But California is a legal state, so if I right. did... If I did do anything like that, it'd be 100% legal, and there would be no but I did not. So
I think personally it should be legal all over the country, but that's just who
Agreed.
Am I.
Agreed. And I heard it kills COVID.
I agree 100%.
You know what also COVID too. You know what also kills COVID? Not talking about COVID on the internet. I'm done talking about it. I'm done. Tapped out.
I brought up the bat, so I kind of messed that up. I apologize.
It's really Gabe's fault.
I take responsibility.
Kama Worthy!
What's my up, wife host? Is my wife is oh, never mind.
Kama, what's going on, brother?
It's good, man. Just got home.
How you doing tonight?
Ah, good. I cannot complain. Can't complain. A little tired, but it's party game.
So, are you back in training? Is there an upcoming fight coming up? What's the story right now?
Yeah, I'm in training camp now. I have a fight coming up. I just can't announce when or who or what time or what location or anything yet, but I'm in camp now.
So the first time, and I have a funny story, because the first time I saw you fight, we were at Snap Foo in New York City. And I was with my date, nice little lady, beautiful lady, and we were on a date. And we have the fights on because it was Cormier versus Stipe. I think it was the main event. Yeah, yeah. So we're watching and we're having popcorn and you get that win and she goes, ooh. And I'm like, stop checking out the fighters. Stop checking. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, you know, obviously you had an amazing career landing to the UFC. Like, how's the process been getting to the point you're at right now?
It's the same stuff. I gotta tell people, it's the same shit, it's the same life. I still gotta take a shit like everybody else. I mean, just same mentality I've always had. Overwork, underpaid, just sticking with that mentality.
How has the pandemic affected your training? I mean, you're on such a roll right now. I would think that the people close to you and around you, your team, would be very protective of your process right now.
Yeah. I just reopened my gym like 2 weeks out, right after my last fight. So it's only been open for like 3 weeks now. So I'm taking that as precautious, as worry as much. But I mean, like, there's only so much you can do. I try to only think about the things I have control under. Like, I try to make sure, you know, if people are leaving town, they have to quarantine for 2 weeks or stuff like that or whatever. But then I just, there's only, I mean, and here in Pittsburgh, it's not really too bad. You know what I mean? It's not like an overabundant amount of cases. It's not like Florida or something. So, I mean, I just control the things that I can and just kind of take it from there.
Excellent.
And your last win was a huge win. We're talking about the MMA Bob Marley. That was a big win. Like, and you win on everybody's radar. Like, people were blowing up when you beat them. Like, how did that win, like, help your career? Like, now are you in the conversation for bigger fights, bigger names? Like, how did that change your career?
Nah, everyone keeps asking that. I'm like, fuck no. I don't want to fight bigger names because I'm on my second UFC fight and I'm still on my first contract. So I'm not going to be fighting somebody that's going to be making – Luis Pena made twice as much as I did. So I won. And I still didn't make as much money as he did. So I'm not going to be fighting some guy who's on like his third UFC contract and he's making like $80,000 and I'm making like $16,000. Because if you're on your third UFC contract, you're on your third UFC contract for a reason. So, I'm just lining things up properly, but I'm not really like jumping and calling people out or doing all that goofy shit. I'm like, nah, I let that stick for everyone else to do that.
I would imagine that right now, you're a pretty avoided fighter. You know, a lot of people didn't want to fight Violent Bob Ross, and then you handled him pretty handedly. You know, I like
there's,
that
you,
you want to take your time and stuff. But I mean, how do you see the landscape kind of, how many more fights do you see yourself having before you get that big name? Cause I would
think, there's 142 lightweight fighters. Like, there's so many freaking lightweight fighters. Everyone can get to that weight class. So, I mean, like, there's so many different fights, so many different things, there's so many different ways. But I'm just trying to make sure I get fun, again, trying to get fun fights. I mean, I have like 6 or 7 guys that I like matchups with, me and my manager and stuff like that. So, I don't think I'm an avoided fighter. Who is it? What's his name? The Native American guy. What's his name?
Well, you're talking about the guy with the weird name.
ATT. Nah, yeah, he wears Native American garments and stuff.
Yeah, Florida guy, Island Fights. I know who you're talking about. He's got an interesting name. I can't.
Brock Waver. Yeah. Brock Waver said we were trying to push for a fight against each other forever ago, and now he keeps saying he wants to fight. And then there's Steamroller Provolo. He said he wants to fight and stuff. So I'm looking to see actually people are actually going to want to fight. And like, not just like make boring ass fucking fights. Like, I hate boring fights.
Weren't you supposed to fight Michael Johnson at one point?
What'd you say?
Wasn't Michael Johnson rumored at one point?
Yeah. When the whole COVID thing hit up, and Ottoman couldn't fight, I got Michael Johnson for a week, and then they canceled the whole card.
Oof. Now you said you have a fight scheduled, correct?
Yes.
You feel like this is a good match? Like, I know you can't tell us who it is. I know you can't tell who it is, but do you feel like for you, this is a good stylistic matchup for you?
I mean, it's a good fight. I mean, like, it's a good fight, I guess you can say. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't want you to. I don't want you to give anything up. Like, honestly, like keep it. You know, keep everything under wraps as much as possible, but. You're not going to take a fight against someone that you don't feel like this is a good fight against, right? Like, this is going to be a fight
It can be a good fight. It couldn't. I mean, like, if Francis Ngannou could make 155, yeah.
There's a point.
I'm being stupid. I got to throw y'all off track. I can't remember sniffing that shit. I'm not answering any other questions about the fight. It's happening. It might be good. It might be boring. It might be ass. It might be entertainment. I might be fighting Francis Ngannou, or I might be fighting the Heidi Karate. You never know. The whole range of people I might be fighting. But
I wasn't trying to get you to give up any information. I, to be honest, like, you brought up three names. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm not kidding. Like, but I just was like curious if this is if you feel like for you stylistically this is a matchup that's like gonna showcase what you bring to the table.
I mean, I think every fight I showcase what I bring to the table. I mean, like, it's a mixed martial arts fight, so I'm always showcasing what I bring to the table. So I mean, it's gonna be a fight. I can't say too much. I'll get the deal start freaking out, so I'm just not gonna say anything.
I'll start looking it up. I'm a nerd. I'll start looking up like who has this style and like
And then it's like Dana White's calling me and firing me or something. I'm coming for y'all.
I don't
know. Your weight class is like death row, like 155. Like you're a dangerous human being. Like, so stylistically, not a lot of people match up very good against you, considering that you go for the kill every single time. Like,
that's what I meant by he might be an avoided fighter.
Right.
He's scary as fuck. And you stole my girl from me.
I mean, there's that guy, the kickboxer. He just fought the other day. He beat the life out of my man. He beat his legs up really bad. There's a lot. There's just so many. Like, I pay a lot of attention, a lot more. I mean, like, there's a lot of really, really good strikers at 145, like just strikers. I mean, if you go to the top ranked guys, there's freaking Drew Dober. I mean, like, there's a lot of like purebred strikers that are gonna be like, fuck him, I'm not afraid to get hit. You know what I mean? Like, and then there's a lot of wrestlers that be like, fuck that, I'll smash him, I'll lay him on his skull. I don't think like I'm really avoided. It's just risk and reward. That's the big thing. It's what's the risk and reward? Like, so I'm at that point now. I'm on my third fight. So it might be for some people, they think the risk and reward might be there. But, you know, I'll let that happen when it happens.
Yeah, you're gonna be a dangerous guy to fucking deal with. Anyway, any opponent, anybody that is put in front of you. And shout out to Three Beards Podcast, one of the best podcasts on the planet. But so, and circling back, and you're talking about fighters pay, and you were talking about money and everything like that. From a pandemic standpoint, under the confines of MMA being under the pandemic, do you feel that your check is adversely affected? How's the business side of things worked into the situation?
Like from the UFC?
Yeah, from the UFC, yeah.
Oh, my check is the same exact it always been. Like they didn't take money away or anything, so I'm happy. Like if they had decided not to do anything, then I wouldn't be making money. You know what I mean? So I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. I'll fucking, like, you know, there's a couple guys out there asking. I'm like, hey man, I'll fight for $50,000, a new car, and some Red Bull. I'm like, fuck it. That's more than I had before. Like seriously, like right now there's a pandemic. Like, let's be realistic. A lot of people don't have fucking jobs, and you're gonna pay me to go beat a person up. That's not really a real fucking job. It's not a real job. Yes, it's risky and shit, but like there are a lot of people out there putting themselves. I mean, they test us, they quarantine us, they test us again, they quarantine us, and they test us one more time. So I'm not really in place of catching COVID-19. So I'm keeping myself safe. I'm keeping my family safe or sort of stuff. So I'm not really complaining about the pay at all.
It's good to hear that you feel safe at events. I film for Titan FC and they do the same thing. You know, they test us every month. And
right.
And people are like, be careful. I'm like, I'm in the safest place on earth.
Exactly.
I'm in a room with 50 people that were just tested. Temperatures at the door, masks, social. This is the safest place.
Exactly.
The question that a fan asked and that I'm curious about. How did you get your nickname, the Death Star?
It was from my first amateur fight. I knocked this guy out like really violently, like his feet were still standing and his body was gone. And someone said it looked like something out of a Death Star, and it just kind of went from there. Now I'm stuck with it.
It's a pretty dope nickname.
It is. I'm a big Star Wars fan too, so
that makes it even better.
Yes. The last one sucked ass though. That was horrible.
Really? Oh no. Really?
It was garbage. It was so right. Fake. It was so Disney.
David, his name garbage, is the Death Star.
My one student, he like dressed up as Kylo Ren. We went to, and we were both feeling like, this is fucking stupid. They just started the movie off like, oh, by the way, the Emperor's not dead. I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Who starts it off like that? Like, that was trash.
they did no building. Right.
They left like 50 holes, like just major holes in the story that didn't get filled up. They rushed up, like fucking Chewbacca died, then he's back 5 minutes later. I'm like, yo, this is fucking stupid. I'm literally in the movie here, like, this is stupid. What the fuck am I watching? I was so mad.
I just had a mental image of you and one of your boys, like, sitting in the movie theater, dressed from head to toe in gear and shit, and disappointed, like,
oh, this is dumb. I was so mad. I was so upset. I gave it 3 out of 10.
Mm.
3 out of 10. Like, that's how bad I think it was. Like, Disney fucking ruined stuff.
Hey. Mr. Worthy, I don't mean to disagree with you because you could probably fuck me up really bad, but like, Rogue One was really good. You didn't like Rogue One?
Rogue One was really good. Yeah. I couldn't hear you for a second there. No, Rogue One was phenomenal. I also liked the first one before this. It's a little cheesy, but it was good. This one, they just took it. They just took the whole. It was bad, man. I had my kids. I'm like, y'all need to watch the Return of the Jedi and turn this shit off. Rogue One was really good. I like Rogue One. I think they need to do a Darth Vader movie, like, kind of dark and stuff like that. So I think that's good. I still haven't seen the show on Disney Plus yet because I haven't downloaded Disney Plus yet because I'm always doing a billion things. But
do yourself oriented. Disney Plus is the bomb, dude. For real.
I know, that's what everyone keeps telling me. I just haven't got a chance to watch it yet. I'm in Fight Club now. I'll download it and start watching it.
Disney Plus and chill, my friend. Disney Plus and chill. Plenty of dates have gone very well thanks to Disney Plus. You have to download Disney Plus, sir. That's the only advice I'm going to give you. I can't give you a lot of advice, but you got to download it. I promise. It worked wonders for my love life. I'm telling you.
Watch the old Disney movies with your date, because there's all these hidden sexual innuendos that, like.
Disney's out there. Disney pushing bags.
My
children.
Aladdin, hey, the Rescuers Down Under has the best one. When the bird starts like going into the like in the landscape of the city, pause the movie. There's like chicks naked in the shower in the windows of the building. I swear to you, bro, watch it.
You know the worst.
What a date.
I took my kids to go see Angry Birds. It was so bad. That was so dumb. But there was a scene in Angry Birds where they were like. The one was peeing into the water, and the other birds were like putting it into their mouth and spitting it into the other bird's mouth. Yo, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a kid movie. Like, what the
Three
fuck is
birds, going on? One lake.
Yeah, exactly. It was some real fucked up shit. I'm just sitting there like, that's not cool. That's not cool at all. Like, I don't know who's supposed to do that. Why is it like nasty? But it was bad. It was pretty bad.
There is some bad stuff, man. There is some bad stuff, and I catch it watching shows with my kids. But then I go back and I watch shows that I watched when I was I'm an 80s baby. Never Ending Story, all the movies out, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, those are dark movies, bro. Like, I appreciate Fraggle Rock more now at 39 than I did at 3. Really, though, Jim Henson was – I want to party with that guy.
So obviously balancing out between being a parent and being a fighter, like obviously there's a lot of shit going on right now with the world and everything's going crazy. Is there any concerns right now, especially traveling out of the facility of your home where you are this amazing father? Like, you know, is there any concerns about getting COVID or like
making
any decisions?
I'm not even worried about this earthly shit because there's aliens. So I'm not. I'm like, what the fuck am I worried about all this earthly shit? They talk about just outer world mobiles and automobiles and shit. No, but seriously, no. I mean, I tried. There's too much. Again, there's too much shit. There's always too much shit. There's always something. There's like the thought of like, I'm a black man. Like the thought of being racially profiled. I don't get into the negative thoughts because like negative thoughts create negative actions. So I just try to stick with. The things I can control, like, you know what I mean? I still with the things I can control and I deal with them and I deal with them as they come. I don't, because there's so much, like, there's just too much shit going on. Like, right now, as humans, I think we have access to too much information. That's why we're just overloading. So, no, I'm cool. Sometimes I just turn that shit off. So, I don't even watch the news.
So, and obviously, I big question, because I was actually watching The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. I don't know if you saw it on Netflix. The Last Dance, and Michael Jordan, he did not want to be involved with politics whatsoever. And obviously, you're blowing up in a fucking minute. I mean, you have two big wins in the UFC and back-to-back. And do you want to separate yourself from politics, getting involved in anything political? Obviously, you want to practice a craft. Is your mindset just like Michael Jordan, where he just want to stay out of all the bullshit and just kind of...
Oh, I say, fuck him. I just tell people exactly how I am. I'm like, fuck him. Both sides. I don't fuck with any. They're all liars. They're all crooks. Like, I mean, like, nothing's changed for the past who knows how long. Like I said, I don't really get into the game. Like, people, like, now you got people ready to kill their best friend over some damn fool who doesn't really care about you. Some other, which billionaire is going to run the billionaire corporation and shit on you? And you have regular people that fucking work at Walmart or some shit or do some regular job. Hating other regular people because some other billionaire told you to. I'm like, I don't even get into that. I'm like, nah. Like, I'm like, if people want to do it, they want to do it. That's fine. But you come to me, I'm like, nah. Shut that shit down. I don't get into politics because it's fake. It's all about voting time. It's about now. Like, you turn on the news, you have one story. The news comes on, it goes, this guy's a crook. The other story comes on, another commercial runs, it goes, this guy's a crook. I'm like, that should be impossible. Like, who the fuck is telling the truth? And you're like, oh, and then it's only the truth is being told if you like the agenda, if it fits your narrative. So like, the truth is not truth anymore. So I don't even keep into it.
Come on, I feel like you're in my head.
Like,
yeah, you just, I think about this shit.
Like, truthfully, there's so much. You only have so much. I was telling people this the other day. You only have so much energy, right? And I have a two-year-old child. What the fuck do I look like worrying about some shit that I have no control over when I can be putting my energy to something that I can actually get a feedback from my family, teaching people, doing something like that, doing actual good things for people. Like, people always talk about political stuff. I'm like, but there's just homeless people all over the fucking place. Like, what do you mean? Like, you want to help people? Go fucking help people. Or do you just want a social media post? And that's why I don't get into it. I'm like, it's not real. It's just, it's kind of like when Facebook's like, oh, go ahead and turn your face the color of France or your France flag or something. It's all about what other people can see from you. And I'm not taking a picture of me helping some lady get her groceries into her car. That's fucking ridiculous. But that's what the world has come to, right? I mean, like,
everybody's got like, a podcast, every good thing they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Intentionally supposed to be doing the right thing when nobody knows you're doing it.
I mean, my big thing is like, if you could just my last fight, I like did a charity thing for, I gave away my gear. I didn't really want to tell people about it, but the ladies at the gym, they had a big thing, they did it. But I kept it real low key, and I'm going to do that whenever I'll donate. I'm not going to tell people because that's not the reason that you're doing it. If you're donating or doing charity work so people know, it's like you're doing good deeds so you don't go to hell. Like, that's stupid. Like,
you should be doing it. Exactly what it is.
You're doing it out of the kindness of your heart because it's what you want to do, not because you want people to know that you did it.
But 90% of it is what you're saying. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. Not doing it with a good intent.
Of course, and like, I'm not saying that everyone that does it like that, that's the reason for doing it. But now with social media, that's the fucking reason. That's the reason for most people doing it. I'm like, it's the reason that, like, yeah. I mean, like, today I did a social media post on my Instagram, and I was taking a shit, and I did it to let people know that people take shits. Like, you know, you watch someone's Instagram, and it's perfect, and it looks awesome, and it's always the perfect picture. And I'm hitting the pad, or I'm in the UFC, or I'm doing this. I'm like, but that's not reality. I'm just giving you a snippet of my life for 30 seconds or a minute or a picture, and that's. I mean, I take shits just like everybody else. You know what I mean? Like I want to make sure people understand that. Like, that's the real world.
It's making you more relatable to a
right. It's like it's real. Like,
yeah.
And because so many people like trendsetters. Like, what do you mean? I'm a what do they call themselves? Not a motivational speaker. Influencer. What the fuck? What are you doing? Like, what are you influencing? I'm like, what do you influence? Like, who are you influencing? What are you influencing?
We're all influencers.
Like, I'm just keeping the vibe going of like selling product. I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude. I can't do that. Like, I can't. I can't.
Yeah, I'm not to step in the bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I'm doing something, if I'm like, even if I get sponsored, I do some stuff like that, I'm like, I can't be fake. Like, I can't. Like, I'm insecure. I'm vulnerable. I'm like, I let people know that. Like, that's a reality. Like Mike Tyson said, that's why I like Mike. He's like, dude, you're good at such a job. I'm never scared. You're a liar. You're not a fighter. Like, you can't admit that to yourself. Like, and like, I think, like I said,
might as well say I'm not human. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm like, dude, I deal with life as it comes in a reality form. And I like to make sure that people know. Like me getting like I'm still just a regular fucking dude. Almost every fighter that I met, they're still just regular dudes. Like nothing special, nothing's over the top. Like I mean, it's crazy because it takes celebrities until they're like really rich, and then they're like, oh, dude, you're like, you know, nothing changes. Like Biggie Smalls been saying it forever. The more money happens, more problems. Like you still have the same fucking problems. They're just billionaire problems. So just be the regular person.
I love your mentality, man. I love where your head's at.
Dude, this is like the best interview we've ever done. So I'm like, wrap it out. Like, it's fucking amazing. So going back to your career, and obviously, you know, we could talk to you like for hours, but like, who would be your ideal opponent?
Say that one more time.
Who would be your ideal opponent for your next opponent? Or who would you want to fight in the division?
Your next opponent.
Like, so I've said this before, and they took the interviews like and fucked it all up. Like, people be messing up stuff in interviews and switching shit up. But I said, I'm a huge Kevin Lee fan. I said this before. I think Kevin Lee is probably the most complete fighter at 155.
Mm. Yeah.
I think he's most complete. Like, even though he doesn't always show his live up to his full potential in fights, I think he's the most complete fighter at 155. So I would love to test myself against him. Hopefully one day down the road, whatever, or how it happens. I know he's injured now and stuff, so I don't know if he's coming back, but that's a fighter I'd definitely like to like test myself against.
Awesome. So we're about to wrap up the show. So last questions for the board for Mr. Worthy, and by far one of the best interviews we ever done. Justin and Gabe.
Champ, you go first.
Oh, Justin. Go ahead, Justin.
I'm the champ. Of the anemic division.
Yeah. There you go.
Undefeated. What was that moment that you knew, you know, where you had a gift? What was that moment where you were in sixth grade and the wrong kid messed with the wrong kid?
So, weird story. I've only been in two street fights in my entire life. I don't fight in the streets. I don't like fighting. I don't like confrontation. I like challenges. Like, that's where people got get it twisted. Like, I don't like to fight. Like, growing up, I would be in the street. And for people start to fight, I just walk away. I'd like try to stop my little brother from fighting or stop my friends from fighting. I've never like broken some, like punching somebody in the face. So, like, I've never done that. Like, it's never just been my mentality. It's just not how my process. I like to be challenged. If someone tells me I can't do something or they're going to do something to me, I like to prove them wrong. But I've always been a martial artist. I've always liked martial arts. And like my mentors and stuff, like I'm not even being cocky. Like, people always just say I just had something different. I just was just trying to find out. I didn't really start getting into really seriously fighting until I was 20. And then like when I went to my first coach, he would always just tell me, like, well, you're just, this is your mentality, the way you approach things, how you approach them. I mean, it wasn't easy, but I just kept the same mentality. I kept that wide mind open, like a kid approach to fighting all the time. I still have it.
Great answer. I mean, you're really talking about the inner monologue. I think it's the most important thing of anybody successful. Right. Positive affirmation. Thank you. And no problem. Thank you so much.
So my question is a two-part question.
Yes.
Number one, how many kids do you have?
I have three stepkids and one biological. So I have four kids total.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, four kids.
Yes.
Yeah. How old's the oldest? That's actually three questions.
He's about to turn 15. Oldest boy, he's about to turn 15.
Oh, 15. Okay. So you have yes. Teenagers to deal with.
Yes.
Do you now, being a fighter, now I'm a father of two little girls, so it's a little different, but oh, hello? We there? No?
We're there. Did we lose him?
Then we lost him.
No, Gabe was on.
I think he's on.
Bro, I was with
an interesting question too.
Damn,
I'm curious because as a father,
we'll see if he comes
the very
back.
The last thing I want is my children to fight. I want them to learn how to protect themselves, and I want them to be able to be sufficient and to have confidence. But I don't want them to be fighters, and I'm curious if that was an avenue that he would take is it sounds like he was a stepson, but 15 is an age for that is something they could be aspiring for. I was just that would have been my question.
Oh, he's coming back.
I'll answer this for you. No,
wait. Yeah. Oh, we got back. Yes. Continue.
So yeah, I was. You were like being a fighter.
All right. So the 15-year-old is old enough to like. Does he train at all?
Yeah, they all train a little bit. Yeah, that's how I actually met their mom, and she brought them to the gym to train and stuff. So,
now, do you as a fighter, do you want them to be aspiring fighters, or are you just like, that's something you don't want them to be part of?
No, I mean, like, I tell them it's good to do it. I want them to do it because it's phenomenal. And I'm like, hey, if you can, like, you know, if your dad's a lawyer, dad wants to pass out his law firm to you, right? That just goes hand in hand. But right. In the same sense, you can't make someone be a fighter. I try to push them to it, I make them take classes and learn self-defense and learn how to deal with bullies and stuff, but I don't make them be fighters. Except for my youngest one, the daughter. She's two. She's not going to have much of a choice. I'm getting her at an age where she just starts to develop stuff, so she won't have much of a choice. Like,
I have two daughters, and I don't want them to be fighters, but they're going to learn enough to be confident and be able to take care of themselves if they have to take care of themselves.
Right, exactly, right. Like you can't, because you don't want to be that person that pushes stuff down your kid, then your kid hates it and hates you. So,
exactly. Know. And I've seen that. I've actually seen that quite a bit. I'm
terrified. So she starts jiu-jitsu with Dean Thomas next year. No, real talk. And judo with an Olympic judo. I haven't just hit her striking coach yet, but she's going to be able to beat everybody in here up.
Good.
I'm cool.
That's how it should be. Strong women. That's exactly how it should be,
bro. It's all either her arm barring them or me killing them and going.
You know what, guy? Arm bars are much easier,
right? And less expensive.
Yeah. And it keeps you around.
Yeah, that's lawyer work.
I'm currently ex-wife shopping with no kids whatsoever, so I will get that dilemma. When the time comes. But Mr. Worthy, I thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Any last words, anything we can look forward to as fans? I can't wait to see the rest of your career and blossom for you being the champ. Any last words for you?
No, I just want to say thank you, everyone that jumped in. Thank you guys for having me on. You can follow me on Instagram at @TheDeathStar_1. Same thing on Twitter. I talk with fans. Don't say no ignorant shit. I say ignorant shit back. But I talk with fans. You want to come on, say some stuff. I'll send pictures, whatever. I'll do all that kind of stuff. I love fans. Like, I love interacting with people. I've been doing it for a long time. And, yeah, good shit.
You're the fucking man. Thank you so much.
You are awesome, bro.
Thanks. Thanks, fellas.
We're cheering for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Wow. How fucking great was that?
I gotta watch one of his fights.
Dude, it was
yeah, he's a great guy.
Dave, you just gotta get back into watching all the fights.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I actually was looking him up as we were talking and to get a little more background. I gotta watch some of his fights.
Dude, he's a gangster. Like,
he's a fucking gangster, Gabe. Bro. And you know gangsters because you are one. You know, yes. Gangster, sir. You are the man.
Point deducted from Gabe for the evening. 2 points for Dave.
I'll take it. I'll get the points back. I just have to,
he's a killer. I know you don't watch a lot of fights. You're a retired champ, but he's one that you definitely want to check out, bro.
After talking to him, and this is actually more so than anything, like even when I was an active fighter and like really, really interested in the sport, the people that I knew were the ones that I wanted to watch the most and the ones that I wanted to have interaction with. Now, he seemed like a great guy, and I absolutely want to know what happens with his career.
Absolutely.
And
obviously, we got to wrap up the show, and we're going to sign offline. But Justin, back on the podcast, made it exponentially just that much better than it already is. So good. And Justin, happy birthday. Last words from Justin. What's going on, brother? Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
I'm just pumped up to be a part of this, man. And thank you guys. This is a dream come true being with you. You are what you surround yourself with. And honestly, like being on a show with a champion like Gabe, who I've way before this show followed and talked to for a couple years now. And Matt just holds us all together. And then David, you. I'm blessed by the best to be here, man. And the next Titan is August 28th. I really want you guys to come down. I'll roll the red carpet out for you guys. Any Titan you come to, please come.
And Gabe, the GOAT. Any last words from Mr. Gabe?
Thanks everyone for watching. And we had some great guests, and we'll keep it going. And hopefully we're getting a little more gel. We're trying to gel it out and get a little more involved. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
What about you, Dave? Last words.
I'm just honored to be a part of the show with the great Gabe and also with Justin. And, you know, I'm just honored to be a part of a great product like Fight Mixer with Matt, who holds it all together. And just just honored to be here with you guys. So I share the same sentiments with you guys. So thank you very much for joining us for the show. Mr. Gabe, Justin, myself, Mr. Matt, who holds us all together. And we are signing off from the Fight Mixer. We'll see you next Thursday.
Hey, Dave, real quick while we're leaving, right? Do I hold my hands this close or is that too close? So if I, somebody can hit me and I punch myself a little bit further.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Hi, I'm Matt Seibel, producer of the Fight Mixer Show. We have a good lineup of guests coming up next week. Take a look for yourself.
Hey guys, it's UFC flyweight Jillian the Savage Robertson here. I'll be on Fight Mixer Podcast August 6th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, so be sure to tune in.
Hey, what's up, you guys? It's Matt Wagy. I'm going to be joining Fight Mixer MMA Podcast August 5th. Make sure you guys come and check it out. It's going to be a great show.